Well, good morning, and thanks everybody for being here. Tim and Tiweri have given us this wonderful opportunity this year on Dharma and Daily Life. It's really a great invitation to explore our lives in ways that we're not just going back to the different Buddhist lists, and we're really doing some reflection. And I find it to be a wonderful thing. And so this morning I'm going to be sharing what I've been reflecting on in terms of habits and patterns that are both conscious and unconscious. Last Sunday, Lyndall introduced us to this topic, and she talked about how, you know, a lot of the habits, they're just natural part of life, and mostly they come out of wholesome intentions. And she also pointed out that sometimes they can be a little less benign. They can come out of our ignorance or strong opinions. So this morning, we're going to look at those habits that perhaps are unconscious and bring them into our consciousness. We're going to talk about habits on the cushion and off the cushion, and how they go back and forth. I'm going to put in a little plug right now to encourage people to stay for the discussion groups. And of course, you're invited to do what's best for you. But just to invite you to think about, is your relationship to the discussion groups also a habit of mind, a preference that has gotten pretty firm in an opinion about what you do vis-a-vis discussion groups? So just as another opportunity to reflect on this. And a concern was raised last week about the language we use around habits and patterns, and how we sometimes our language is kind of judgmental. So I just wanted to address that and thank the person who brought that up. You know, the suttas are just filled with the Buddha's language. And of course, translated from the Pali, but we have some wonderful scholars who've been translating over these years. And he uses language like skillful and unskillful, wholesome and unwholesome, corrupted or peaceful mind, unwise and wise, vigilant and negligent. These are all words of discernment. We are encouraged to use discernment as we investigate what's going on in any given moment, what's going on in our minds. And it's through this discernment and investigation and understanding that wisdom arises. So as we further explore these habits, I'm going to be using some of those kinds of discerning language, questions that we ask. Is this habit or pattern skillful or unskillful? Does it benefit me and others on our path toward liberation? Is it something to cultivate or abandon? So as we discuss this morning, I'd ask you to keep in mind these kinds of questions. I looked for a story, but didn't find one. And then I looked for a poem and didn't find that either. And so this morning, I'm starting with a quote from Carl Jung. And he says, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. So we're about taking these habits that we may not have thought about very much and see how they relate to both the cushion and off the cushion. The first habit I want to talk about comes from our cushion, our practice. It's a habit of being with what is. In practice, we're encouraged to practice non-interference, being with whatever is right now. It has become a wholesome habit in our time as we meditate. We allow the breath to just breathe. We allow an itch to be an itch, and we watch as it changes. We let a mind state or a thought just be. When we notice agitation or daydreaming or some kind of constrictive mind state, we come back to the relaxed posture and we breathe in and out. We come back to that present moment and fully experience it. We allow whatever is happening in the mind to retreat to kind of the back burner, and we take refuge in the body, staying out of the words and the content of the thought and into the felt experience of the moment. From the very beginning, from your first intro class, we've been cultivating this habit of being with whatever is in the moment. And we've been instructed that thinking that somehow this moment could be different is delusional. We practice with what is. So looking at how we do that in our daily lives, looking at non-interference as a habit, asking ourselves, is this situation, does it really require my involvement? Do I need to weigh in on this? Is it necessary for me to comment? You know, in daily life, if you're like me, we often strive to get our own way. You know, we think our ideas are the best. I like loading a dishwasher a certain way or putting my dishes in the drainer in a certain way. I fold laundry a certain way. I've got certain recipes for scalloped potatoes that I think are the best. I think we all have these habits that are pretty benign. But I think that we can start with maybe loosening our grip on the rightness of these opinions. Recently, my neighbors and I had a work party in the garden. I'm the gardener, and they are the beneficiaries of my garden. And so they're willing to help do some of the maintenance projects. So one of my neighbors started doing the project that I had asked him to do in a manner I would never have done. And I'm looking at him thinking, wow, my way is so much more efficient. We only, you know, we're all working in the garden. I wanted to make sure that the project went well. We only had a certain amount of time. But over these last couple of weeks, I've been thinking about my own habits of mind and how much I love to comment and be involved in everything that's going on. So I kind of zipped it up. I zipped it up and just allowed him to do the project just the way he wanted to. And wonder of wonders, I got muted. That's okay. I've done it too. So did you hear the last part of my garden story? That it all happened and we got it, everything done in an hour and a half. And I didn't comment on how he was doing it. We all have opinions, but we don't always have to act on them. We can practice with being with situations and allowing them to unfold in their own way without our interference. Just like on the cushion, allow the moment to unfold and at the very least pause and ask ourselves, you know, is what I'm about to say going to be skillful or unskillful? Does it meet my intentions? Like my intention for that garden work party was that they were going to have such a good time that we were going to do it again and that they're my neighbors and we're going to, you know, everything's going to be okay. So that intention was more important than saying, I can't believe you're doing this project the way you were going to do it. So I think we have these moments that we can stop, just like in practice on the cushion, where we know that each moment is fresh. It's never happened before. Can we bring that kind of freshness to our daily lives? The second area I want to look at is around intentionality and energy. And instead of going from the cushion to daily life, I'm going from daily life to the cushion. So in my daily life, I am very productivity focused. I'm an organizer. I always have my to-do list. It's kind of an intention for the day. And it includes things like sitting in yoga and taking a walk. But it's very focused on all the tasks that I need to do. This kind of energy has served me really well. It's a habit I've cultivated over many years. My business is run well. I meet my deadlines. I take care of things. I get a lot done. But then I sit down to meditate and I feel that same kind of energy of getting things done. And I have to stop and ask myself, am I bringing an agenda to my sit? And am I hoping that something specific will happen? Now, intentions around our practice, I think, can be really helpful. A lot of us bring intentions or aspirations to our practice. Sometimes they're really simple, like, to the best of my ability, may I be at ease with whatever arises. Or it might be more like the heart energy that Lauren was saying. You know, may I hold whatever arises with kindness and compassion and ease and gentleness. Do you bring an intention to your sitting practice? And when you do that, what's the energy that comes along? Is there an eagerness? I know for me sometimes, and this morning it happened again, I listened to Lauren's voice, excuse me, and her invitation to bring heart energy. And I just thought, oh, you know, I'm pretty nervous before I give a talk and my hands are sweaty and my mind is going over and over. And I just went, oh, an invitation to just be quiet, to just sit in stillness and let my, you know, feel my hands on my lap and feel my feet on the floor. And there is such a sense of contentment. So I ask you, what is that kind of energy? What happens when you come to your cushion or chair? Has it become kind of just going through the motions? Is it just a routine? Or would bringing an intention and an aspiration be a good thing to practice and to try out on your cushion? The third area I want to talk about is our relationship to impermanence. We know anything can happen at any time. You're on a hike, you trip over a limb, and you sprain your ankle. A virus infects the whole world. I mean, if we haven't learned that anything can happen at any time, this year has been a lesson. The economy takes a downturn and that career you thought you'd retire in is gone. A spouse dies. You get a serious illness. You've planned a hike and it's raining. Whatever. We watch in practice, we watch as the moments change, and we know that we didn't make any of it happen. Thoughts arise from the mind that likes to think. Body sensations arise from the body. And then we sit, it's like the weather, you know, sunny, then rainy, then cloudy, then a rainbow. Conditions come together and things happen. And how much of this understanding do we bring to our daily lives? We know that life unfolds as it does. And our level of influence and control is really pretty limited. Of course, you know, Tim talks about the navigational self or that conditional self. We all have it, and thank goodness we do, because we make plans every day and we take care of the business that we need to, and our health and bodies and relationships and work. But we also know from our practice how limited our level of control is. So when changes happen, I know that for me, I've been watching this habitual response that I have when change is about to happen. And I respond with anxiety and fear, not like full-blown terror, but there's this unease. Just recently, my maintenance man came to me and said, can we have a chat? Well, every time he's been here a couple of years, every time he wants a chat, that means that he's made a big decision and he's going to inform me of it and it's going to affect me. So one afternoon he asks for a chat and I start feeling all this tension in my body. What's going to happen? Oh no, he wants to leave. I'm going to have to find a whole new maintenance person. Oh my goodness. And then, because for a couple of weeks I've been thinking about habits of mind, I did something I do quite often, and I encourage you to do the same. I gave myself a little Dharma talk. You know, I've been sitting and listening to Dharma talks for a lot of years, and they're in there somewhere in that gray matter. And I talk to myself about change happens. He's fairly new in his business and he's going to want to make changes. And then I also thought about all of my life experiences and how actually I've dealt with them pretty well. Not always, but I have a pretty good track record. So I gave myself this little Dharma talk. And then we met for our chat. Sure enough, he wants to make some pretty big changes. But you know, once I gave myself that talk, I sat pretty with a lot of ease. I listened really well. I was able to offer him lots of support and caring because I really like this guy. And in the end, I think it's going to be just fine. So I ask you, do you have certain kinds of emotional, physical, mental responses to change when it hits you in the face? And the last area I want to talk about is our habit of believing that our practice is a solo effort. When we sit in Sangha, it can feel like it's just about me, especially during COVID. I mean, we haven't even been able to get together in person for anything, including those wonderful non-residentials where you get to sit for two full days with other people and your cushion is in the same place every day and you get to feel loved for that person next to you, you know, and you benefit from their energy and all of that. But we haven't had any of that. You know, the thoughts arise in this mind. The sensations are being pulled and arise in this body. When we're feeling pulled and tossed around by the turmoil, it can feel pretty isolating. And of course, during COVID, I think we all are experiencing that. But when Lauren and Lyndall and Tawari and I first started Sunday Sits before Arv and Susan joined and Jerry, we wrote our community statement partly to address that sense that we do not practice for ourselves alone. Lauren said it this morning, freeing our minds of greed, hatred, and delusion through this practice offers the opportunity for others to do the same and reduces ignorance and hatred in the world. It's a statement that reinforces the truth that we practice not for ourselves alone, that how we live, our thoughts, our actions, our behaviors, our speech affect those around us. We've learned over these years, probably you've heard this 1,000 times, all volitional acts bear fruit. What we think, say, and do either creates more suffering or helps to reduce suffering in the world. And how people in your life have noticed any changes in your behavior and your speech over these years. Many years ago, my adult son, I think he was in his late 20s, said to me one day, "Can I come to meditation sometime?" And I was really shocked because I was very careful about not proselytizing and I didn't want to push things. And I just, you know, I would say a few things, but I never said, "Hey, I think you should meditate." And when he came, and of course, as things will happen, this was when we were meeting at Congregation Beth Shalom. And who was the first teacher he listened to? Sharon Salzberg. And so he was, of course, hooked from that moment. But when I said to him, "Why after all this time did you want to come and meditate?" He says, "Well, Mom, I've been watching you. I've been paying attention to what's been going on in your life. And I really like what I see." So know that how we think, act, behave, how we interact with other people, the kindness in our heart, are reflecting on, do I have to fix this? Do I have to comment on this? Can I just be quiet? Can I let people be who they are? Can I let things be? That affects everyone around us. You know, there are a lot of questions that arise as we think about habits and patterns. And one of the best questions, I think, is, Is there a separation between your practice and daily life? And is your practice only on the cushion or maybe when you go on retreat? But really what Tim and Tiwari have given us is this opportunity to look at our daily lives. It's really saying our daily lives are our practice. Every moment is an opportunity for that. Tim said in one of the Monday nights that looking at habits and patterns can be a really helpful way of making them conscious. And once conscious, we can then explore them, investigate them, ask the questions of whether they are contributing to our own path for freedom. It's a way of looking at your own aspiration. Why do you sit? Why do you practice? So let's just be quiet for a minute and let all these words that I've shared just kind of settle in. When I get really nervous before giving a talk, I always give myself this little reminder that what I'm about to share is intended for the benefit of those who are listening. And I hope that what I've had to share might spark some of your own reflection on those habits of mind that serve you, and perhaps the habits of mind that don't serve the practice and don't serve your aspiration. So, as always, there's an invitation if you want to leave, but of course there's the invitation to challenge that habit of mind and stay with us and share your thoughts. But I give you some time to do that and to say goodbye and thank you for being here with us. And so the question for our breakout groups is, if any of the themes that I've shared have been useful, then perhaps talk about those in your group. But is anything else got stimulated in your own habits of mind that have come up for you, just to share that? And just a reminder about our guidelines for groups. We give everybody a chance to share. We listen. We practice really active listening. We don't offer advice. Certainly if somebody at the end, after everyone's had their time, if they said, hey, I'm dealing with this, anybody have any thoughts, feel free to share. And enjoy, and it's almost 11, so I'll bring us back at about 11:15, and I'll give you some warning, and enjoy your time. Okay, I think we're all back. I'd love to hear any things, any reflections that you found to be useful around these habits of mind and making the unconscious conscious or whatever came up. So I think you can unmute yourself. Carol, did you have something that you, great, you go for it. Hi.
Well, so Suze, I certainly appreciate you bringing up what I talked about, and I think I was the one in terms of value judgments. I do want to several things. Lauren bringing up a question during meditation, pleasant and unpleasant, and I find that the best in terms of, and it's more appropriate, the most appropriate for me, because I do have those moments of unpleasantness. And I know that's something that has to emerge out. And I sit with them, but I don't like them. But along with that, in terms of intentions going into meditation, I don't have any. My intention is to sit. And I found that that is actually the best way to come in being completely open.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, and I know that for a lot of people, not having intentions is helpful. And that has changed for me over the years. And sometimes I find that starting with stating my intention is a really helpful way for me to direct my energy. And we all learn what works for us. Yeah, thanks, Carol. Anyone else want to share? Kathy?
You know, I want to respond to the same thing. When you talked about having intention when you sit, I thought, you know, I don't have intention. I mean, I don't have a particular intention. I'm going to sit and meditate, but I don't have a particular intention. I found myself wondering if my meditation would benefit from me developing an intention that I sit down and have a particular intention about my meditation that day. So it's something that I think is worth looking at.
Great. Thanks, Kathy. Yeah. You know, and sometimes people use the word aspiration more so than intention, because intention can sometimes feel kind of agenda or goal oriented. Mm-hmm. Great. Explore it. Thanks, Kathy. Mm-hmm. Anyone else would like to share how this resonates, or whether it does or doesn't, or any of that?
This is sort of interesting. I found that, because in our group, one of the things that came up was maybe a little bit of the opposite of having intention, in the sense of having that energy of trying or goal orientation or productivity, just like you talked about, Suze, coming into our meditation.
Yeah.
And the way that attitude can really reinforce that sense of self, mm-hmm, in meditation. And so it's an interesting balance. I mean, in the sense of bringing the intention of wanting to be present and open to what occurs, but at the same time recognizing that it really doesn't help to have some kind of idea of this is supposed to happen.
Yeah,
for sure. A hard lesson to learn.
And learn and relearn and relearn.
Learn and relearn. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you, Lyndall. I think that's really important to point out that there can be a lot of selfing, and especially like when Carol said, when unpleasant arises in practice, and you go, oh my God, here's that restless mind again, and then all the thoughts that are, you know, about that, and instead of just going, oh, restless mind, there it is, you know, can I just receive it? Can I just be there with it? Anyone, before Carol, before we go back to you, just let me make sure that someone else didn't want to share. I think Sean and Bruce, and then don't forget what you had to say, Carol, so we'll get back to you. Sean and Bruce, yes, please.
Hi. The intention, I realized that most of the time when I'm meditating, I'm doing something. Trying, as was said, trying to do something. I hardly ever, probably, I can't say all the time, but hardly ever absolutely do nothing. So perhaps the intention of doing nothing, I always have to be watching my breath, noting, listening, you know, feeling, you know, just all this stuff going on where I'm actually working at meditation. I think I might attempt to try and do nothing. I don't know if I'm going to be successful.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of like what Lyndall was saying, that balance, and how when we can just rest in that quiet and allow, instead of I'm watching my breath and I'm watching the body and I'm doing whatever, and that awareness can be what is paying attention, and we're just kind of the receptacle and just being there, and it's an interesting process. I think that would be great to let go, just, you know, for a sit, let go of me doing anything,
Yeah.
Because actually you're not you're not in charge of your breathing. The breathing just breathes.
Yeah, right? But most of the time when I'm watching my breath, I realize I'm trying to control it.
Uh-huh. Well, good insight. And then to just, what would it feel like if I didn't try to make my exhale longer or my inhale longer or whatever, if I just watched what is the natural breath without me trying to alter it?
But then I notice that I'm trying not to control it.
Yeah, that you keep peeling that onion. Keep peeling that. Yeah. A good investigation for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Probably others can identify with that as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, Carol, I think no one else is asked to speak, so go for it.
So just quickly, you said restless mind. When I'm waiting for things to emerge and trying not to do anything, I mean, I'm not even trying not to do anything. I think I've been pretty successful at letting go. It's a restless heart. And that's where the things have their own time and their own way to emerge. And that's where it's sitting with unpleasantness.
Yeah, yeah. Allow, you know, that reminding ourselves that things have a way of just unfolding in the time and manner that it will, that life is like that. And that, yeah, there's do you feel a kind of relaxation in when you can be in that kind of space?
No, not really.
Okay.
When it resolves, and there was something I shared in group that did resolve this morning, then it's really discernment to see what was going on that was causing the strife, I guess, internal strife. Mm-hmm. But learning how to sit with that is just very important, and just, you know, like lasting it out. I think it's really what it is lasting it out.
Yeah, that things are going to change and we don't know when or how.
Well, this is more discernment about how I'm perceiving things. Yes, and admitting something that I could potentially bang myself up for, basically getting it back to that whole judgment thing.
Yeah. Thanks, Carol. Anyone else want to share anything? We have about a minute left before I turn it back over to Lauren for some closing. And okay. And I just, you know, encourage people. We still have the last couple weeks of the month, where next week Arv is going to talk about his perspective on how we sit with habits and patterns. And the last week of the month, Lauren will be the teacher, kind of talking more about practice ideas and doing some summary. And that particular Sunday will be the first time ever that Tawari is going to be the meditation leader. And it's been sweet to hear her express her nervousness about being the meditation leader when she's been our teacher all this time. But so thank you for your attention and participation and ongoing practice. And Lauren, take it over.
Kidoke. Well, just for our closing, I'd like to say a few words about Donna. You can go to our website, and there's a donate tab if you would like to offer Donna for our teachers or for Sims. Sims is fully supported by your generosity for all their operating expenses. And the guiding teachers depend on your generosity for their livelihood and ability to study and prepare the teachings to share with us. Please consider giving Donna at whatever level you're comfortable with. And no one has ever turned away based on ability to pay. I have a few announcements of upcoming events at Sims. Next week, the Sunday sit, as Sue said, would be with Arv, and Sue's is going to be the guided meditation person. And then this coming Wednesday is the first of the new series of Buddhist Essentials, starting out with the three characteristics. So that will be led by Susan Steve Wilhelm, two local Dharma leaders, our own Sue's here. She's pretty busy these days. And if you haven't had an opportunity to take any of our courses, you can just drop in. You can come, go to all of them. They're the third Wednesday of every month, and they cover a variety of the Buddhist teachings. So we welcome you to just show up. You don't have to pre-register. Looking ahead to next month, April 1st, Tim, our co-guiding teacher, is starting a new introduction class to meditation class for 6 weeks on Thursdays, 7 to 9. And Suze, again, is doing a day-long at the end of April, the 24th, with Steve Wilhelm, Finding Freedom in Impermanence and Not Self. So that should be a really wonderful opportunity. Did someone say something? No. Okay. And then just to remind you that we have weekly sits every Monday night, Thursday night on Capitol Hill. And Steve Wilhelm does the first and third Thursdays for the East Side. But of course, it's on Zoom, so anyone can attend. And then we have daily drop-ins sits every weekday morning and also on Tuesday at 4 p.m. So now let's just take a moment to sit together with our offering of merit and metta, and remembering, as Sue said, that our practice is never for ourselves alone. We share the merit this morning among ourselves, our Sangha here today, and with all beings, known and unknown to us, just born and to be born, extending our metta beyond the borders of time and place for the well-being of all.